Tonight we want to focus on the parable of the talents, found in Matthew 25, 14 through 30. Matthew 25, 14 through 30, the parable of the talents. Beginning at verse 14, the text says, "For the kingdom of heaven is like to a man traveling to a far country, who called his own servants and delivered his goods to them. And to one he gave 5 talents, and to another 2, and to another 1. To each according to his own ability, and immediately he went on a journey. And then he who had received 5 talents went and traded with them and made another 5 talents. And likewise he who had received 2 gained 2 more also, but he who had received 1 went and dug in the ground and hid his Lord's money. And after a long time the Lord of those servants came and settled accounts with them. So he who had received 5 talents came and brought 5 other talents, saying, 'Lord, you delivered to me 5 talents, and look, I have gained 5 more talents beside them.' His Lord said to him, 'Well done, good and faithful servant. You are faithful over a few things. I will make you a ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord.' And he also had received 2 talents came and said, 'Lord, you delivered to me 2 talents. Look, I have gained 2 more talents besides them.' His Lord said to him, 'Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been a faithful over a few things. I will make you a ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord.' Then he who had received 1 talent came and said, 'Lord, I know you are a hard man, reaping where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. And I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. And look, there you have what is yours.' But his Lord said to him, 'You wicked and lazy servant, you knew I reap where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. So you ought to have deposited the money with the bankers, and at my coming I would have received back my own with interest. Therefore take the talent from him and give it to he who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more shall be given, and he shall have an abundance. But from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the unprofitable servant into outer darkness, and there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Perhaps you've heard the story about Morris Siegel. Morris Siegel was a man who was a street person in Los Angeles, California, several years ago. He roamed about the dark alley, sleeping out of doors. He carried everything he owned in a shopping cart and pushed it around. He was found in an alley, dead. Of natural causes, perhaps heart trouble, was the thought. He had 3 bank accounts that contained a total of $207,421. And yet he was a street person walking on the streets. In 1979, Morris's father had died and left him the money. But when he didn't go and claim the money, the Division of Unclaimed Property tracked him down and his family forced him to take the money. He took just enough of it to buy himself a car that he would sleep in when it was cold, and some of his family rented an apartment for him, but he never went to the apartment. He died December the 14th, 1989, with $3 in his pocket and an untouched fortune in the bank, and never went to the apartment that his family had rented for him. And you look at that and you think, what a wasted life. What wasted opportunity he had. A man had nearly $250,000 in his bank account and sleeping on the street and pushed everything he had around in a grocery cart. And before we begin to be too hard on him, could it be that we do no better than Morris Siegel? And what I mean by that, could it be that we have blessings that we waste? Could it be that we have talents that we have buried? And could it be that we have opportunities we've passed by? You look at him and you said, you took the money and you pass by the opportunity you had that you could have had some things in life, at least a place to live and some food to eat, and you didn't have to live like a street person. And could it be that we do not much better with the blessings and the talents and the opportunities that we have? And thus is the point of the parable of the talents. So let's talk about several things about the parable of the talents. Let's talk about the passage. About the passage, I want to focus on the context of that passage, where it sets and how it fits with the setting of the context. There has been a warning in the context about watching in view of the second coming. There's a discussion about the end of time and the second of coming that begins back in chapter 24 and in verse 3. Remember the disciples had asked this question, when will these things be? That was about the destruction of Jerusalem. And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? They ask actually two questions, though they thought it was one. So they ask about the second coming of the Lord. Well, chapter 24, much of it deals with the destruction of Jerusalem, but beginning about verse 35 through the end of the chapter, there is warnings about the second coming. Because at verse 35, heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. But of that day and hour knows no one, no, not the angels in heaven, but my Father only. So what's the rest of the chapter about? The rest of the chapter is about, we don't know when the Lord is going to come, so we need to be ready and we need to be watching. In fact, I want you to notice with me that beginning at chapter verse 36 says that we don't know when that's going to be, but beginning at verse 42 and 44 and then in chapter 25, his warning in light of that, since we don't know when the second coming is going to take place, we need to be watchful. So now let's look at verse 42 of chapter 24. In verse 42, he said, watch therefore, for you do not know the hour when the Lord is coming. Since you don't know when he's coming, you need to be watchful. Look at verse 44. Therefore, you must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming in an hour when you do not expect him. We need to be watchful. That's the point. Let's go to chapter 25 in verse 13. This is the verse immediately before the parable of the talents. He said, watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour and when the Son of Man is coming. So three times since the question was asked, the Lord had warned, you need to be watchful about the second coming of the Christ. Be watchful in anticipation of the second coming. Now there are three parables in the context, all of which focus on watching in some aspect. There is the parable of the 10 virgins we've already given consideration to that focuses on being watchful in waiting. While you're waiting and you don't know when the bridegroom is coming, you need to be watchful. Here we have the parable of the talents. We need to be watchful in working. That is, we need to be using our talents, making use of those while we're waiting. It has to do with watching and waiting in the context. Then there is the separation of the sheep and the goats, beginning at verse 31 to verse 46 of this same chapter. And it focuses on being watchful toward judgment. There is going to be a separation and a judgment, and so we need to be watchful. So it's setting in the context of being watchful in all things. Now let's talk about the audience who hears this parable. Some of the parables are directed at the scribes and the Pharisees and the hypocrites, but this one is not. This time it is not the Pharisees and the chief priests. But going back to the beginning of chapter 24, it was the disciples of the Lord who had raised this question, what is the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? And when will these things be? And so the warning was to the disciples, those who were the followers of the Lord, that they need to be ready and they need to be watchful and they need to be like the man who has the five and the two talents and not like the one. Now let's talk about the parallel. That is, we've looked at the passage in its context. Let's look at a parallel. And that is the parable of the minas or the parable of the pounds in Luke chapter 19. The reason we look at this is it's very similar and many think it is the same parable and we're going to give evidence that it's not, but it is a parallel. Not a parallel account, but a parallel parable. And so let's read this parable. It's a little bit long. It's not a short parable. But let's read about the parable of the pounds as it's worded in the King James. Or the parable of the minas in the New King James wording of that. And then we're going to see what the contrast. So let's read that since we haven't read that just recently, or you perhaps haven't read it just recently, so we get the bearing of what this parable is about. And it gives us some insight, though it's not an exact parable of the Matthew chapter 25. Beginning at verse 11 of Luke chapter 19, now as they heard these things, he spoke another parable. Because he was near Jerusalem, and because they thought the kingdom of heaven would appear immediately. And he said, a certain nobleman went into a far country to seek for himself a kingdom and to return. And he called 10 servants and delivered to them 10 minas. And he said to them, do business till I come. But his citizens hated him and sent a delegation after him saying that we will not have this man reign over us. And so it was that when they returned, having received the kingdom, then he commanded his servants to whom he had given the money, to be called to him that he might know much, how much every man had gained by his trading. And he came to the first saying, then came the first saying, Master, your mina has earned 10 minas. And he said to him, well done, good servant, because you've been faithful over a little, have authority over 10 cities. And the second came saying, Master, your mina has earned 5 minas. Likewise, he said to him, You will also be over five cities. And another came saying, Master, here is your mina, which I have kept put away in a handkerchief. For I feared you, because you are an austere man. You collect what you do not deposit, and reap where you do not sow. And he said to him, Out of your own mouth I will judge you, you wicked servant. You knew that I was an austere man, collecting what I do not deposit, and reaping where I did not sow. Why then did you put your money in the bank, that at my coming I might collect it with interest? And he said to those who stood by, Take the mina from him and give it to him who has 10 minas. And they said to him, Master, he has 10 minas. For I say to you that to everyone who has it shall be given, and from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him. And bring here those enemies of mine who do not want to reign over me, make me to reign over them, and slay them before me. Now that's the parable of the minas, and let's see what the difference and what the parallel might be. These parables are very similar in principles. And here's the similarity between the parables. First of all, there is the master who gives money to his servants in each one. In each one of them, the master goes away. In both of these parables, each are expected to trade what they have been given and gain. In each of these, we have some who did well, that is, they gained, and others who failed, and they consequently gained nothing. In each of these, the one who failed accuses master of being harsh and accused his master of something that is in contrast to what accuses master of being what he thought he should be. We'll get back to that a little bit later. So they're very similar in all 5 of those areas. Giving money to his servants, expecting his servants to do something. Some did well and one did not. But let's talk about the fact that they're not the same. This is not the same parable. And what are the differences? Well, in Matthew chapter 25, that parable was given at the Mount of Olives after his entry into Jerusalem, which happened in Matthew chapter 21. But in Luke chapter 19, he was near Jerusalem before his entry, according to verse 11 and about verse 25 a little bit later. So they're given at different times. So this is not the same parable. In this parable in Matthew chapter 25, the audience was the disciples, as we saw in Matthew chapter 24. But in Luke chapter 19 in verse 3, it was the multitude. It's a different audience. In the parable of the talents, you have the householder leaves for a time and then he comes back. But in the parable of the pounds or of the minas, you have the nobleman who leaves to get a kingdom. That's not the same. In the parable of the talents, there was unequal distribution, giving 1 5 and 1 10, and 1 5 and 1 2, and then one talent. But there was equal distribution of giving each one a mina each or a pound each. So they're not the same. In the parable of the talents, they had the same reward. The reward was the same for each one who did well, for the 5-talent man and the 2-talent man. But in the parable of the pounds or of the minas, the reward was proportional to what he had done, given ruling over 10 cities and over 5 cities. That's not the same. In the parable of the talents, there was severe punishment, but the punishment here was being deprived of the pound. So they're not the same, though they're very parallel. And so that's why I refer to it as a parallel. Alfred Plummer said, an estimate of probabilities on each side seems to be favorable to the view that we have accurate reports of 2 different parables and not 2 reports of the same parable. They don't seem to be the same, though it is parallel. We learn much from one that'll help us with the other. Now let's talk about the parable itself, that is the parable of the talents. And let's go back to Matthew chapter 25. And let's look beginning at verse 14 and 15. Let's talk first of all about the fact that the talents were given. The talents were given. In verses 14 and 15. The kingdom of heaven is like to a man traveling into a far country, and he called his servants and he gave to them his goods. Verse 15 says, he gave to 1 5 and another 2, each according to his own ability. Let's talk about how he gave those talents out. First of all, he gave those generously. Meaning by that he gave to them his goods. What belonged to him, he distributed to his servants. So he gave very generously as he gave of the talents. He gave universally, meaning he gave to each. According to verse 15, he gave to each according to his ability. So he gave universally. He didn't give some talents to one, but didn't give talents to another. But he gave talents to each. But furthermore, notice that he gave impartially, that is, he gave to each according to his own ability. That is, he was not partial, giving one more than another, showing partiality, but he gave to one each according to his ability. That is, the one who received five talents had the ability for five to handle five, and the man who had the one talent had the ability to handle the one talent. And so he gave each according to his ability. So he gave generously, universally, and impartially. That is, he recognized that there were differences in the abilities they had, and he gave trustingly. That is, he left his money with them while he was gone. That is, he put them in great trust. In fact, he trusted them a great deal, and we'll get to that point in a moment, how much trust he had in them by giving them a talent. That was a ton of money he gave them. A lot of money he gave them. And he entrusted them with that. And here's what I learned from that, that God gives to each one of us talents to work and to use in his service, whatever that may be. And we'll get to those talents in a moment. But God gives to each one of us. He gives generously of his talents. He gives universally. He gives impartially. And gives trustingly. He entrusts us with a great deal of things. Now let's talk about what a talent was, how much that was. You may think of that as a small sum of money, that he gave this one a small sum of money. But it was a great sum of money, according to A.T. Robertson. A.T. Robertson, one of the ripest Greek scholars of the last 100 years, says that one talent represented a considerable amount of money at a time when a denarius was a day's wage. Well, that doesn't mean much to you. Well, let's look at this chart here, and you may not can read this, but we'll start right here. A talent was equal to 3,000 shekels. A denarius would be 1/4 of a shekel. Now, a denarius, which is 1/4 of a shekel, would be basically a day's wage. So you're talking about many and many and many days' wages would be in a talent. Now, according to, this is from Bible Manna, based on these numbers represent, and you may not be able to read these, but this is representing a talent of gold and a talent of silver. That a talent of gold would be based upon when the price was $250 an ounce of gold, or $5 an ounce for silver, that'd be $273,000 of gold, if it was in gold, or $5,460 in silver. As of yesterday, gold was selling for more than that, for $1,268 an ounce. That would be $1.3 million. A talent of gold would be $1.3 million. A talent of silver, based on yesterday's price of silver, would be around $20,000, or a little less than $20,000. So we're talking about a lot of money. So when one received one talent, if it was a talent of gold, that's $1.3 million. That's a lot of money. A talent in the old days meant a measure of weight. It was the heaviest weight in the measuring system. It was used a measure of gold and silver and iron and bronze, and later on it was a measure of money. One talent for a Jew was the equivalent to 3,000 shekels. We just told you that. As much as a man could carry, one talent was about all he could handle. He couldn't carry much more weight than that. A lot of times in Jewish history, in the times of Jesus and Matthew, one talent was equivalent to 6,000 denarii. 6,000 denarii was about the earnings of an ordinary worker for 15 to 20 years. And as this author says, it was in ordinary parlance, is a ton of money. A talent was a ton of money. And you think of the trust that was put into that. We'll come more back to that in a moment. But here's what happened in the talents. There was a man who was given five talents. That was tons and tons of money. And a man who was given two talents. And then there was a man who was given one talent. But even the man who had one talent was given a tremendous amount of money and asked to take care of that. Now, there's the management of the talents. There was a distribution of the talents, as we saw in 14 and 15. Beginning at verse 16 now, we have the management of the talents. By that, how did they manage their talents? What did they do? Well, beginning at verse 16, the man who had received five talents went and traded them and made another five talents. The five-talent man, he worked and he served promptly and faithfully, and he gained five more. So he took a ton of money and he gained another ton of money, or five tons of money, and gained five tons more. What about the two-talent man? The two-talent man did the same thing. He worked and he served promptly and faithfully, and he gained two more talents. Had two tons of money and he gained two tons more. What about the one-talent man? The text says he went and he buried his talent. He didn't even try with that. We'll come back to that in a moment. Let's get the picture now. The man who had five talents went and he gained five more. Now he has twice of what he had. The two-talent man gained two talents more. He has twice of what he had. And this man went and buried his talents and didn't do a thing with what he had. He was given a great opportunity, given great responsibility, but he didn't fulfill anything with that. Let's go back to that one-talent man. I want to suggest to you he didn't gamble or he wasted his money. He didn't come back to his master and say, I don't have it anymore because I've wasted that. I spent it and it was a poor investment. I gambled it all away. He didn't embezzle it. Didn't make that poor investment. I invested in some things that just didn't wash and it fell through. He simply failed to use it. He didn't even try. And we'll look at his defense here in just a moment. Let's begin at verse 19 now. Let's talk about the reckoning. Where the talents were distributed, verses 14 and 15, beginning at verse 16 through verse 18, the management, how they managed their talents or didn't manage. There came a reckoning day, beginning at verse 19 through verse 30. What happened on the reckoning day? Well, let's look at verse 20 and 21. At verse 20 and 21, verse 19, let's back up to verse 19. So not long after, the Lord of the servants came and he settled accounts with them. There's a time coming when accounts are going to be settled. The five-talent man, according to verse 20, said he brought five talents more and he said, look, Lord, You delivered to me five talents, and I've gained five talents more besides them. He was commended for being a faithful and good servant, the text says. In fact, he was promoted. He said, I'll make you a ruler over many things. In other words, I'll give you more trust. I trusted you with a lot, and I'll give you even more than that. And he was allowed to enter into the Lord's, look at verse 21, enter into the joys of your Lord. In other words, he was allowed to enter the pleasures of the palace. Now, let's talk about the two-talent man. God's going to reckon with him. And verse 22 says that he had received two talents, came and said, Lord, you gave me two talents, and I went and I've gained two more. And what the Lord said to him, he said, you're a good and you're a faithful servant. And he also said to him that I'm going to promote you and I'm going to make you a ruler over many things. I'm going to give you even more trust. I trusted you with two talents, I'll give you even more. And furthermore, enter into the joys of your Lord, you're allowed to enter the pleasures of the palace. Now here's something I learned from that. The man with the lesser talent, in this case, the man with two talents had less than what the man had five, but they were rewarded the same as the man who had greater talents. There's a lesson in that. Here's the man who only had two talents, but as long as he uses the two talents, he got the same reward as the man who had five talents. But he gained five more and he only gained two. But God deals with each one according to their abilities. They both received the same reward. That wasn't the same in Luke chapter 19. Now let's go to the one talent man, beginning at verse 24 through verse 30. It's reckoning day for him too. And I want you to notice that he gave a defense. Beginning at verse 24, he who received one talent came and he said, Lord, I knew that you were a hard man, reaping where you have not sown and gathering where you do not scatter seed. And I was afraid and I went and hid your talent. And look, here's what is yours. We'll suggest to you that inaction calls for many words. The others didn't have to say much. You gave me five, here's five more. You gave me two, here's two more. But it was a man who didn't do anything, inactive, that does more talking. And so he gives his defense. What did he say? He said, my reason for doing that, I went and hid it. I didn't do anything. I didn't try to invest. I didn't try to make anything. I didn't try to gain anything. Why did you not do anything? Because I know you are a hard man. An austere man, the Luke account says. It simply means he had a mistaken view of God. This is representing God, of course, but in this case, he has a mistaken view of his master. The charge is that he demands more than one can do and requires too much. It's unfair. And you expected me to take that and gain one more. And that seems to be unfair. You're a hard man. You expect me to do something. When you come back, you're expecting more than what you gave me. You're expecting me to do something with that. That is unfair. He thinks his master is watching for the least failure. You are a hard man. He has no faith in his master's fairness or goodness, though his master had faith in him. His master had faith, you can handle one talent, perhaps $1.3 million. Or if it was silver, at least $20,000. And his master had confidence, you can do something with that. But he didn't have confidence in his master. that his master would treat him fair and treat him right. And I want to suggest to you that all sin is rooted in a misconception about God. This man had that. But there was another defense. He said, "You're a hard man." And he said, "I was afraid. And so I went and hid my talent and buried it in the earth." He was afraid. So he did nothing. Again, I suggest you had no faith in himself, though his master had faith in him. His master said, "You could do it. You should have done it." But he didn't have faith in himself. He was afraid of failure. What a contrast we see earlier in the chapter where the five virgins were overconfident, but now we have a man who is underconfident. They were overconfident. Everything's going to be fine, and we'll make it with what little oil we have. It didn't work. He's underconfident. And I want to suggest to you he was inconsistent. His charge was that you require more than you should. You're a hard man. And so his action was he didn't even do what he could have done. He didn't even try. He didn't even try. Let's talk about the master's reaction to that. He gave his defense. Now the master reacted to the other two by simply rewarding them. But now the master gives a reaction. What was the master's reaction? There's three things. First of all, notice in verse 26 and 27, he rebuked him. Look at verse 26. "But the Lord said, 'You wicked and lazy servant.'" He said, "You're wicked and you're lazy." In other words, the task was not all that hard. You have no reason for not doing that. The reason you couldn't take the one talent and turn it into one more talent and brought two back to me is because you're wicked and you're lazy. You could have done better. This wasn't all that hard. This wasn't all that difficult. That's why I gave you one talent instead of five, is because I gave you what you could handle. You weren't expected to gain five more. You expected to gain one more. You should have done that. You have no reason for not doing it. It wasn't all that hard. Secondly, beginning at verse 28, he said to take away even the talent that he had. The talent would be taken away. Look at verse 28. "Therefore, take the talent from him and give it to him who has 10 talents. You'll even lose what you have." And then in verse 30, "Cast him into outer darkness where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Now let's talk about the application, which is obvious. There was a master who travels to a far country, who had servants. He gave them talents. They were to trade their talents. The master returns. There's a reckoning day. There's the joys of the Lord. And then there's outer darkness. Obviously, the master is Christ. Traveling to a far country, he ascends into heaven, which he's about to do. This is the Lord teaching his disciples on Tuesday of Passion Week, just before he's to die. The servants, obviously, are the people of God because those are the people in the audience, according to Matthew chapter 24. The talents are our task and opportunities that we have. The trading of talents is working and using the opportunities that we have. The master returning is the second coming, mentioned in chapter 24, mentioned in chapter 25. The reckoning is the judgment day. The joys of the Lord represents heaven, and the outer darkness represents hell. That our Lord has given us our talents, and he's gone away, and he's coming back, and when he comes back, he's going to give. We have to give a reckoning to him for what we've done with the talents that we have. And so you might have 5 talents or 2, or you might have 1. Are you bearing your talent? Are you using your talent? That's the question. Now let's spend the rest of our time talking about the principles, that is the lessons that we've learned from this. There are several things. We learn, first of all, from this that we have been given talents, every one of us. We all have talents. There is no such thing in this parable as a no-talent man. It wasn't that there was a man who had one, had to five, and another man had 2, and another had one, and then here's another man who had no talents at all. There is no such thing as a no-talent person. You've been given talents. Now let's define talents. These are not just natural or developed abilities, according to verse 15 of Matthew chapter 25, that he gave to one 5 and another 2, each according to his ability. It's not just your natural and developed abilities, but these talents were given according to their abilities. It was something beyond that. The emphasis of the parable is on work and on service. And so therefore, it's talking, the point in the context is to be working while you wait. While you're waiting on the Lord to return, while you're waiting on your master to come back, then you're to be working and you're to be waiting. And so it has to do with the responsibilities and the tasks that are given and the opportunities that you have. William Taylor observed, "It is evident that by the reference here is not to these. It is rather to the opportunities which have been given to men in consequence of their abilities and their environment." Based on your abilities and the environment in which you are and what you're capable of doing, God has blessed you with opportunities and with blessings. What are you doing with those? That's the question. So when we talk about talent, what is that talent? It's not money. It's not millions of dollars. It's not $20,000. It might be in some cases. But it's any task that God has given you, any responsibility that God has given you, any opportunities that have been laid at your feet, any abilities that you have, any work that you are to be performing, and any command God has given you. There's a reckoning day, and God's going to ask, what have you done with the task I gave you? What did you do with the responsibility I gave you? What are you doing with the abilities I gave you and the work that I gave you to do and the commandments I gave you to obey? The point is, there's a reckoning day coming. Here's another lesson I learned from this. I learned something about trust and responsibility. If someone gives you a few dollars, that doesn't necessarily mean that they, to handle for them, doesn't mean that they have a great deal of trust. They might could afford to lose that. But if someone gave you up $1.3 million and asked you, take care of that till I come back and invest it, that shows they have a great deal of trust in you. Not only trust, that there's a great deal of responsibility. Now remember, the talent was a lot of money. What a grave responsibility to be given $1.3 million, or even $20,000, as the case may be. 1 Corinthians 4 and verse 2 tells us that we're all stewards of what belongs to God. We're all considered as being stewards of any blessing that God has given us. We don't own anything, but God has made us simply the stewards. We've been entrusted with great responsibility there too. And let's list some things wherein you've been given the responsibility. You're a steward of your soul. Matthew chapter 16 and in verse 26, you're a steward of your children. God has entrusted you to raise that child. And that's worth more than $1.3 million to raise this child to walk in the fear of His name. And your soul's worth more than $1.3 million. And then there's not only that, there's the gospel that you've been entrusted with. That you're to teach others the gospel, 2 Timothy chapter 2 and in verse 2, I should add, in addition with verse 15. Things that you have heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou unto faithful men. You've been entrusted with money that God has given you. Whatever degree that you, it might be a dollar, it might be millions of dollars. God has entrusted you to use that to His glory and to His service. There's brethren that you have been entrusted with. When one is overtaken in a fault, you with your spiritual, restore such a one, the spirit of meekness. We're to encourage and exhort one another. We've been entrusted with time. And so when the reckoning day comes, when God said, here's your soul, what have you done with your soul? I gave you a soul, what have you done with that? When God begins to ask at the reckoning day, here is your child I gave you. Why aren't they faithful to the Lord? And why weren't they taught the scriptures? And why aren't they faithful in service? Why did they not do better? Why didn't you train them well? There's a reckoning day coming. And when, what about the gospel I gave you? How did you treat that? What did you do with it? Did you share it with others? Did you try to understand it and teach it? And what about when my brethren went astray? Did you go after them at all? Did you try to restore them? And what about the time I gave you? Why didn't you use it properly? There's a reckoning day coming. Here's another lesson I learned. That we need to work according to our abilities. That God's expectation is based upon our capability. Let's go to 2 Corinthians chapter 8. We looked at 2 Corinthians 8 this morning. And obviously this is dealing with the contribution for the poor saints at Jerusalem. But look at verse 12. For if there be first a willing mind, it is accepted according to what one has and not according to what one does not have. They were to give according to their abilities. And so God's expectation is based upon your capabilities. God doesn't expect you to do what someone else does. God expects you to do what you're capable of doing. Philippians 4:13 will make much of the same point. God doesn't require more than we can do. We cannot be expected to do more than we can bear. But God does require you to do what you're able to do. Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. The point of that in context is you can do anything God expects of you. When God lays a burden upon you, God expects you to fulfill that. And God says you can do that. I learned from this parable, we're going to be judged individually and independently, not by comparison. In other words, the two-talent man wasn't judged that he didn't gain five talents. Why didn't you do as well as this man over here? He gained five, and you only gained two. But he was judged individually based on his two talents. And the one-talent man was not judged because he didn't gain two or to gain five. It's because he didn't use the one. And you're going to be judged individually and independently, not comparison to others. And so you look around and you say, you know what, I'm not as good as brother so-and-so or sister. I can't do what they do. I don't know what they know. You're not judged on the basis of comparison, but individually. I also learned that opportunities vary. The man who had five had more opportunity than the man who had two. And I also learned from this parable that we need to avoid extremes. How so? Well, we need to avoid pride and thinking that I am better than you because I have 5 talents and you only have 2 or you only have 1. But the extreme of that is being discontent because I only have 1 talent. I've only been given 20,000 when you were given 60,000. Or only given 1.3 million when you've got over $3 or $4 million. The point of that is God judges us individually. You need to avoid extremes. Some think because they can't do something big, I don't have a lot of talents, I don't have a lot of opportunities, therefore I am to do nothing. Here's something else I learned. I learned a lesson about the sin of neglect. I learned that God's not going to hold us accountable for what we don't have, but He holds us accountable for what we do have. God's holding the one talent man accountable only for the 1 talent. That's all. The 2-talent man only for the 2 talents. The talent that was unused was the same as if it was totally misused. Suppose the 1-talent man had taken his 1 talent and he had given it all away instead of investing it. He'd misused it. Suppose he had taken the 1 talent and he had gambled it away. He had misused it. Suppose he had taken it and he had distributed it and give it out in the matter of handing it out to the poor and he doesn't have anything anymore to give to his master. He had flagrantly misused it. He did the same thing by not using it at all. The same thing with your talents. It's not what the 1-talent man did. It is what he did not do that made it a problem. And I want to suggest to you in light of James 4 and verse 17, in other passages, that many Christians are going to lose their soul because of neglect, not because of what they're doing. And the question might be raised, what am I doing that's wrong? It's not what you're doing, it may be what you're not doing. To him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. Let's go back to Matthew 25 in the context. In the same context, for what it's worth to us, in the judgment scene, beginning at verse 31, when the Lord would say to those on the right hand, that I was hungry and you gave me food, and I was thirsty and you gave me drink, and I was a stranger and you took me in. And the answer question is going to be, when did we see you hungry, and when were you sick, and when were you in prison? And then there was going to be those who were on the left hand when he said, depart from me because I was hungry and you gave me no food, and I was thirsty and you gave me no drink. And the question is going to be, when did we do that? We don't know when we did that. We don't know when we didn't do that. In other words, they've neglected their responsibility. Again, many Christians will lose their soul because of the lack of responsibility. Finally, let's talk about another lesson we learned, and that is that the servants of God can lose their souls. The doctrine of Calvinism says that the child of God cannot so sin as to lose his soul. Once saved, always saved. And I learned from this that one can lose his own soul. Remember, he's talking to the disciples. Those who are the people of God, Matthew chapter 24 and verse 3, but then I come to the parable that verse 14 starts, that he gave this to his own servants. And if the master represents Christ, these were his own servants that he leaves the talents in their hand. It's their own servants. And yet, according to verse 26, here was one who became an unprofitable and a wicked servant. And according to verse 30, he was to be cast into outer darkness where there would be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And so I'm learning that even the people of God could lose their soul. They're cast into outer darkness. So I learned several things from the parable of the talents. We see the passage in its context. It is in the context of warning that we don't know when the Lord's going to return. We need to be watchful and we need to be active while we wait. We need to be active. So we see the passage in its context. We saw a parallel in the pounds or the minas, the parable itself, and then the lessons that we learn. We close with asking the question, what are you doing while you're waiting? Because that's what Matthew 24 and Matthew 25 are about. You're waiting for the second coming of the Lord. You're waiting for your master to return. He's gone to a foreign country. And you don't know when he's coming back. And what are you doing while you're waiting? What are you waiting on? What are you doing? Are you using the talents that you have or using your time and your opportunities? And that's the point of the parable. There may be one or more present this evening who's not a Christian, who's not a child of God. Would you come believing that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God? Would you repent of your sins, acknowledge your faith, and be buried in the waters of baptism for the remission of sins? If you're subject in any way, would you come while together we stand and while we sing?